We've been meeting Australians of the Year of all varieties on The Year That Made Me, and our guest today is Corey Tutte, the New South Wales Young Australian of the Year for 2020. He's a Kamilaroi man from the Illawarra region south of Sydney, and he loves science. As a kid, he gave impromptu science lessons to children around the neighbourhood. 2 years ago, he set up a project called Deadly Science, probably in the coronavirus environment. We should say it's not deadly in the viral sense. It's deadly in the sense of awesome. Deadly Science teaches science to kids in remote communities. Corey has around 100 schools that connect with him via Skype, and he's sourced and sent out more than 5,000 books and 70 telescopes to schools across Australia. Corey Tutte has packed a lot into his 27 years, and he's here to talk about all of them, but one in particular. Corey, welcome to The Year That Made Me.
Hello.
Great to have you. Now, look, we know that as a kid you were putting on impromptu science lessons, but can you tell us a little bit more about your childhood and what it was like?
We didn't have a lot during my childhood. My sister and I pretty much really had each other. My sister was pretty much raised me. She was
older sister.
Yeah, older sister. She was getting me dressed for school, packing my lunch, and you know, this was a product of trauma. My birth father left when I was two, due to domestic violence, and I never saw him again. Mm-hmm. And mum, you know, she did her best. She always did her best, and I think it was never going to be an easy ride, but I'm really glad that I have my sister with me. And my sister and I kind of found joy in, we moved around a lot, but there was always animals around us. So we always enjoyed the science of that. It's just fitting that she became a teacher as well. So
great. And was there always a sort of scientific interest in the animals as well?
Yeah, it was, I'd always just had that hunger to know more. You know, when I was chasing water dragons on the farm and they were going into the dam, I was wondering why they were holding their breath underwater for so long. And then, you know, that encouraged me to read about them, and they can hold their breath underwater for an hour.
Wow.
And they have these really cool lungs that just allow them to do that. And they just inflate, and they can actually break them up into chambers. So it's like sort of like an oxygen tank.
Amazing.
So it's really cool.
And obviously, and this was a passion that you and your sister shared?
It was more so me, because my sister never really picked up the 6-foot tiger snake. I sort of went a bit too far with that. But we were always, you know, catching shinglebacks, having pet birds. Like, we had a pet magpie as a kid. It was a really interesting childhood.
Obviously, lots of challenges though. And one of the, you know, themes of your life is that you've witnessed a lot of tragedy. There was one incident, was it when you were 8 years old?
Yeah. So I went to, we had moved back to the Illawarra with my mother, and we were living on the Princess Highway there, and I unfortunately witnessed a fatal accident of a school friend, and she was killed in front of me. And that, as a child, you don't normally see, you know, the impacts that has on a person. But I think that, you know, although that was really unfortunate, it kind of molded me to who I am, a compassionate person.
Mm. And that interest in animals and science sort of became vocational. You became a zookeeper. Can you tell us what encouragement did you get to become a zookeeper, and maybe also did you get discouragement?
Oh, definitely. You know, at the age of 16, even before I was 16, I'd been talking about being a zookeeper, because I was always, you know, picking up animals and talking about them, and it was the dream job for me.
Yeah.
And you know, I got to 16, I got to year 10 certificate. And to be honest, I'd spent a lot of my school years, I was very good at school in certain aspects if it interested me. Mm. But if it didn't, I probably didn't apply myself nearly as much as what I could have.
It's been known to happen.
It's been known to happen. And, you know, I was probably more interested in catching snakes in the paddock than learning maths. But, you know, I sat down with my careers advisor in year 10, just before I sat my year 10 certificate. And a lot of people will probably listen to this and they'll think badly of him, but, you know, he said, stick to a trade or you'll probably end up in jail, or you will probably end up dead by the time you're 30. And, you know, it's a very blunt thing to say, but he could have said it the other way. He could have said jail, dead, then trade. right. So he meant it in the best possible way. And that was a product of the time. You know, this was, what, 12 years ago now. Mm. And he's actually a really nice guy. We've connected since. Right. And, you know, he wanted the best for me, and I was able to prove him wrong.
So what did he say to you about zoology? Did you say that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I said, look, I wanted to be a zookeeper. I wanted to be like Harry Butler or Rob Brettle or Steve Irwin. But, you know, he said that I needed 4 PhDs and a degree in zoology. And, you know, it wasn't till I did the AIM program and I met another Indigenous zookeeper that I was sort of, I could be a zookeeper without those things.
And you managed to do it, yeah?
I managed to do it. So I.
So what age are you now when you...
I'm 16.
Yeah, right.
So I've finished my school certificate and within a month of him telling me that, like I'm on a bus, then a train, and then on a plane, and I'm in this random part of Western Australia on a wildlife sanctuary learning how to feed joeys.
And loving it?
And loving it, but it made me grow up. All of a sudden, I was... had to work out problems for myself. You know, you couldn't call your mother up or your sister and to bail you out or a mate. You know, you had to learn on your feet and be really independent.
On the Year That Made Me, we're speaking with Corey Tutt, the 2020 New South Wales Australian of the Year. And Corey, the year that you've chosen as the year that made you was another year that involved tragedy, but also a turning point for you. What was the year that made you?
This was 2011 and it was just after my 18th birthday and I had a best friend that I worked with at the zoo and he kind of left the zoo and started to do something else and we remained in contact and he unfortunately committed suicide. Mm. And, you know, when you've gone through a bit of tragedy in your life, you think you can handle things. I actually lost the love of animals. That comfort I got in, you know, connecting with other kids and people with telling the stories of our animals and plants and science, I actually lost that. And it was a really scary time for me because talking about reptiles and science is my bread and butter. It's, yeah. You know, what gets me up in the morning. And when you lose that, you feel a bit lost.
So you actually left the work of zoology, is that right?
Yeah, and it's a pretty funny story because I saw an ad in the Illawarra Mercury for an alpaca handler. And it's really stupid because I got in a suit because I rang this guy up and I'm like, hey, I'm interested in applying for the role. Send him my resume and I'm like, I'm handling tiger snakes and feeding crocs. I'm sure I can handle
lateral experience, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, like it's, you know, And I'm like, oh, you know, I wonder what the other applicants are going to be like. And I get to his house and I'm wearing this suit and he goes, you start Monday. And I realize that alpaca shearing is probably not the most desired profession.
But this year was also, you know, amidst this tragedy and a sort of crisis of a personal crisis, I suppose, for you as well. Did this set the path towards deadly science?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the first alpaca I ever saw headbutted me in the face and it was... funnily named Pikachu, which is a Pokemon right. That is not, it's not particularly a Pokemon that's tough. Like if it was called Blastoise or something, it would have been a lot better. But it cracked my cheekbone.
Really?
And it left me with a really nasty eye injury. And it was probably a bit foolish, but instead of throwing in the towel and saying, hey, this probably isn't the job for me, I kept going. And I kept going because I knew I needed to heal. And I couldn't heal being around people and being around the zoo environment. So we did all this traveling. We went all over Australia and New Zealand and we're shearing these alpacas. And, you know, there was days where we spent 12 hours in the car and we probably spent 6 not talking to each other and 4 having deep and meaningfuls and 2 listening to Spice Girls' Greatest Hits. And they were, it was so nice to actually, it was probably one of the only times in my life where I've actually had someone properly listen to me. And you know, tell me when I'm out of line, but actually care, you know, and care in such a way that, you know, I was able to heal and that was really important.
So when did deadly science start? And just tell us, how'd you get the idea and what's it become now?
I've had the idea for a really long time because as a zookeeper down in the Shoalhaven region, there was a lot of Indigenous kids that used to come into our zoo and I used to spend a lot of time just talking to them about animals and showing them animals and letting them into enclosures and stuff. I probably shouldn't say that, but, you know, there was always that growing need to empower my First Nations brothers and sisters to find science. But it really started when I started working at the University of Sydney about 4 years ago now. And I started connecting with AIM Mentoring, the group that I was part of when I was at school. And you know, I quickly found there was no science, and I started talking to kids in Redfern and Waterloo, and we started talking about space stations and, you know, reptiles with furred eyes, partial eyes, which allowed them to see in colour. You know, we were learning all this stuff, and it was stuff that every kid should be able to learn.
And it really was those questions from the kids that made a big difference for you?
Yeah, it was a real eye-opener because, you know, I've been to every state and spent time in the outback, and I've seen these kids, and they're just, there's just a love of learning. And when we talk about the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians, I think there's a perception that Aboriginal kids don't love learning, and it's so wrong. Mm. Like, they love learning. And then I Googled most remote schools in Australia, and I just found them so under-resourced. Some schools only had 15 books in their school, and I felt that was just wrong. But like any scientist, when you find something that's wrong, you've got to find a solution. So my solution was packing up every book I owned, and I started sending these books out, and the number of books I've sent grows every week because I'm still sending books.
Fantastic. So what's the scale of it now, and where do you get the books from? Because you've sourced a bit of funding through GoFundMe, is that right?
Yeah. So it started off, I was actually going to bookshops when I first started and spending, you know, 30% of my income, and then I realized I actually don't earn a lot of money and I can't live off 2-minute noodles, and I do need to save money because I'm a young person that probably does want to own a house one day. And so I started working two jobs, and I started working at this pet hotel after work. And for the first 8 months, I worked every single day at my regular job and then also my second job. And I saved up enough money where I was buying books. But then that one or two schools I started with turned to 3 or 4, to 30, to 40, to 100. So I started this GoFundMe page on advice for a few colleagues at the uni, and I've raised just to date $68,000.
Fantastic.
But it's, if we talk about impact, it's not just the money that we've raised, it's the, I don't think there's anyone that sees a Deadly Science post that doesn't get a positive experience from it. Mm. And you know, I think there's so much negativity in this world that, you know, every time you open up your phone, you're seeing the stuff with coronavirus, or you're seeing, you know, conflicts or whatever. But I know that when I put something on my socials, or I know that when someone sees it, a kid holding a Deadly Science certificate or a book, that they're going to get that little bit of positivity in their day.
Mm, great. What's been the most rewarding part of Deadly Science for you? Is there a particular moment that sums it up for you?
There's a few. I mean, the accolades are one thing, and it's, you know, it was really great to have my mum there when I won the Young New South Wales Australian of the Year, because I actually didn't think I was going to win it at all. And I handed her my honour roll and said, "This is yours." And then before I knew it, my name was read out, and that was an amazing experience. It kind of felt like a dream. But then when I think about it, the most amazing things that I hold dear is the connection with the communities and the kids, and you know, being able to teach kids how to read by Skype, or get them to see, have an understanding of the world that's around them. And those are life skills. Mm. And if you take one positive memory from childhood and you bring it into your adult life, things are going to be okay.
Right. Well, it's deadlyscience.icu, and something tells me that it looks like you've raised $68,000 now, but plenty more funding required, because at the moment, Corey, you're still funding it yourself, are you?
Yeah, with the GoFundMe, but we're in the process of making this a not-for-profit, a charity. And with that, I want to bring more people in. You know, I've had a lot of help. I've had a lot of great people help me along the way, but I really want to make this a legacy so that we can have First Nations people, because we are the world's first scientists in STEM and contributing. And, you know, there's a lot of things said about our people, but there's one thing that's true, and our culture is very beautiful, and we're so talented. And we shouldn't just think of Aboriginal kids as AFL footballers and artists, because they've got so much more potential. You just got to find it.
That is absolutely great. It's a deadly project, deadlyscience.icu. Corey Tutt, thank you so much for chatting with us today. And we do often ask, what's the song of the year, or what's something that's a bit of music that sums up the year that made you? So what's your song for today?
So it's not from the year that made me, but it's a song that always just kind of makes me feel better. And it makes me feel really good, because it's just got a really Deadly Beat, and it's by East Journey. It's called Octopus. So I'm going to select that one, and it's, you know, it's with Yoffi Indie as well. So it kind of has that cultural element, and I hope everyone enjoys it.
Changing colors like not a pin. I can see the sunset changing Changing.